The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Good morning. You're very welcome along to the programme for this Tuesday, the 23rd of June, 2026. 4 minutes past nine, and we're broadcasting from a beautiful northwest of Ireland. If you're listening across the region, you'll know all about it. Where are you listening from? What's the weather like where you are? Just listening to the news there, and quite rightly so, you know, it's important we put the information out there. I'm not criticising that. But I just wonder, when we talk about, you know, hot weather and you hear about old people and frail people and the warnings and all this kind of stuff, and the government, I believe they're doing the right thing. Well, does that scare people? Does that make you fearful? I mean, are you an older person, and when you hear that, does it make you fearful, or do you go, all right, okay, actually that's good advice, I'm glad that people care and they're saying that about me? I'm just curious, because I was listening then on the news, right, about, again, this is our news and it is the way it's done, and I'm the head of news here, right? But, you know, it was about the water and the dangers of the water. So as soon as the good weather comes, there's stories about the danger of the water. And we have to carry that, because that comes from the Irish water safety people. And then, of course, then we're talking about older people and frailer people and the risk of the heat. So we're heading into this glorious spell of sunshine. And a lot of the news is about, you know, don't go near the water because you could die, you know, don't go outside because you could die. And I'm just wondering, you know, does that, what's your impression of that? Do you feel cared for and looked after and go, do you know what? I know the crack, but it's good to get that information out there for those that don't. Or does it feel a little bit like fear, you know, that you feel you're fearful that, you know, we can't enjoy the good weather because there's always something to worry about? I'm just really interested in what your views are in relation to that. It's going to be hot. I remember some really hot summers, really, really hot summers. I remember literally the tar running down the streets. No exaggeration. You know, you would step in it and it would come with you. You'd leave. It was liquid, effectively. And we used to mess about as kids and fray eggs outside and all that kind of stuff. We certainly were able to do that one summer. I'm not saying it was a consistent part of our childhood. But there's no doubt the yellows on the maps that were 26 degrees have turned to red now. And, you know, there is this sense that, you know, this impending doom. I've no doubt, I personally don't, I've no doubt that I do believe the climate is changing. We talk about weather. Weather is what happens on a day. Climate is what happens over time and the trend. But anyway, there's a lot in there. Just in case there's anything in there that you want to talk about. 086 60 25 000 is the WhatsApp and the text number. 086 60 25 000. You can give us a call on 07491 25 000. Or you can email comments at highlandradio.com. Just to remind you, in case you're not aware, that if it suits you, maybe you're on your summer holidays, maybe you work in the home or from home, then you can watch the show on your smart TV, your Fire Stick. Pretty much every TV now sold has the YouTube app on it. And we're there for you to watch on the wall or in the corner of your room or in the kitchen. Just go to YouTube, type in Highland Radio Ireland, and boom. The visualised presentation of the show. And we're across Facebook as well and on the X platform. The Irish Times, a big news out of Northern Ireland today, really significant news, primarily, I suppose, for the victims, but just for politics and society, with the former DUP leader found guilty on 18 child sex abuse charges. It took the jury 10 hours to make up their minds, but only 10 minutes to deliver their verdict. In the dock at Newry Crown Court yesterday afternoon, Geoffrey Donaldson stood as the clerk read out each of the 18 counts, beginning with the most serious, that of the rape of a child. Guilty, the foreman replied. Guilty, he repeated after every one of the charges. Guilty. The jury verdict was unanimous. The former DUP leader showed no emotion as he listened to the judgment being delivered, just as he showed no emotion throughout his month-long trial for child sex offences. Now, maybe it's in the reporting today because I haven't been able to read it all, but there was something very peculiar about the reporting, and that was a letter that he sent apologising for his actions to one of his victims. And it was said many occasions, day after day, that it was stated that the letter wasn't apologising for sex abuse, that it was for something else. But I couldn't find anywhere anyone asking him, what were you apologising for? What was the letter about? Now, maybe it's going to come out in the reporting today, but I couldn't find that question being asked to him anywhere. Well, in 2024, two women told police Donaldson had abused them as children from ages of about 7 to 13. Yesterday, he was convicted of rape, 13 counts of indecent assault on a female and 4 counts of gross indecency with or towards a child over a more than 20-year period from 1985 to 2008. His wife, Eleanor Donaldson, and I still really also can't get my head around this, who was ruled medically unfit to stand trial, was found in a trial of the facts to have aided and abetted rape and indecent assault, but she will serve no sentence. So even if she was found to be guilty of those charges, it's not a conviction. She could never have been sent to prison. But can she, if she's found to be in sound mind in the future, can she then be sentenced to prison? Because obviously, have they determined that she wasn't of sound mind when she aided and abetted, or that she couldn't stand trial for the charges now, or can she not be convicted of the charges into the future again? And I'm going to maybe talk to reporters on this one. It was never, ever made really clear what that was all about, certainly not in any of the information I have seen. Is she in prison? Is she in a mental institution? Is she at home? I don't know. Is she in Casablanca? I really don't know. None of that was reported. A couple of things that I thought would be really critical to that coverage. The Irish Independent, Fianna Fáil TDs are planning a pre-summer showdown over planned reform of the triple lock, with the issue to be discussed at today's meeting of the parliamentary party. This is something that bothers an awful lot of people out in society, but there seems to be no appetite, up until what I'm reading right now, for a debate on the issue, or for it to be teased out, or for the public attitude really either to be sampled by way of debate or by referendum. There was hope in the government that the Defence Amendment Bill would be passed in the Oireachtas before the summer recess. The bill aims to abolish the requirement for UN Security Council approval for overseas Defence Force missions. Defence Minister Helen McEntee had wanted the bill in place as close as possible to Ireland taking over the presidency of the European Council. But a group of Fianna Fáil TDs are trying to put a halt to any rushing of the legislation, claiming it has not been discussed properly within the party. Up to 20 backbenchers have penned a letter claiming the bill constitutes a fundamental change in traditional Fianna Fáil policy as communicated in successive Ardesh policy manifestos and public statements, which is all factual. So that's interesting to see if the backbenchers there get their way. Irish Daily Mail leading with a story that more than €100 million has been spent on medical cards for Ukrainians. I'm not sure really what this means, but as I say, it's been given prominence, so I'll throw it out there to see what you think. Over €100 million has been spent on medical cards for Ukrainian refugees living here since 2022. New figures confirmed almost $34 million was spent last year on medical cards for people receiving temporary protection from Ukraine, bringing the total to $101 million. A further 21,500 people who were granted or even seeking asylum in Ireland were issued medical cards or a free GP visit card through the health service last year. There's been a big resistance over the years to try and limit the amount of medical cards that are out there, because we're not increasing the amount of GPs, we're not increasing capacity in hospitals, but primarily the GPs, you know, that local point of care. And in a very short amount of time, you've got tens of thousands of people receiving medical cards, which of course is going to put pressure on services if they aren't being invested in. Well, these figures were released by the Primary Care Reimbursement Service, which oversees medical card approvals in response to a parliamentary question to Fianna Fáil TD Albert Dolan. Under the EU Temporary Protection Directive, people from Ukraine are granted immediate status in Ireland in response to Russia's illegal war and automatically qualify for a medical card. So if you arrived here in a Porsche 911, which is unlikely, you automatically are given leave to stay and a medical card. It's good to see in certain places anyway, the price of petrol and diesel falling. I haven't really checked home heating oil selfishly. Just don't need it at the moment. But hopefully we'll see further reductions. It's down to 168, 169 in places, 171, 172 more generally. And it would seem that the US and Iran are making progress in terms of trying to put something in place for the long term. So A, the pointless killing of people, the bombing of people would stop, but also B, globally, we would have a little bit of stability. JD Vance has said his talks with top Iranian officials in Switzerland have created a good foundation for a successful final deal. The US vice president claimed progress on multiple fronts, including the establishment of mechanisms to ensure the Strait of Hormuz stays open and to address fighting between Israel and Hezbollah militants in Lebanon. And Israel are continuing, although it's been the quietest spell for some time, for 3 months in South Lebanon, Israel still continues to ply whatever it's trying to do over there. Many of you, like myself, were following the developments in the Mike Gain murder investigation. It was bizarre. There's still some fundamentally simple but unanswered questions that, because it's before, will be on before a jury, I can't really even speculate now. But almost 200 witnesses are involved in the case of a former US soldier charged with murdering farmer Mike Gain. A 9-week trial is set to begin at the Central Criminal Court in January. Michael Kelly, a native of Maine in the US but of no fixed abode in Tralee County, Kerry, was sent forward for trial last month after being served with the book of evidence. Mr. Kelly is charged with murdering Mr. Gain, who was 56, at Carrigkenmare on a date between March 20th and 21-25. 200 witnesses expected to be called in relation to that. And lastly, maybe it's good news. This is a choice. I think there are very, very healthy 65-year-olds who would love to keep working because they love the work, but have almost at times been felt compared or compelled to retire at 65. Well, you can push that to 66 now. Others might feel that their ability to retire and have a bit of time to themselves is drifting further away. It's very subjective. But workers will soon be allowed to stay in their job until they're 66. New retirement laws will be implemented on Monday, the government confirmed. They allow workers to choose to remain in employment beyond their contractual retirement age, where the age is below the state pension age of 66. So maybe good news for you, maybe not so. I don't know. Now, down the country particularly, we are going to see some particularly hot weather this week, weather that we're not particularly accustomed to seeing. And whilst temperatures might be matching, you know, what we've seen earlier in the year, this humidity, nighttime temperatures and all, which will make it feel unrelenting for some. We have to expect here too temperatures reaching 22, 26 degrees Tuesday, Wednesday and hottest on Thursday, I believe. Gary Martin's Director of Economic Development and Emergency Services. And just to reiterate, I suppose, Gary, that we're not really accustomed to prolonged spells of hot weather. Our houses really aren't set up for it. And there are those that are more vulnerable to higher temperatures than others.
Yeah, good morning, Greg. It's highly unusual for me to be on the radio talking about, I suppose, a severe weather event, and it's associated with warm weather. Normally we're dealing with storms and rain and those other types of things that we're well accustomed to in Donegal. This is equally, I suppose, as risky, particularly for some of our population than some of the more severe weather, particularly around the heat and the impact that it may have on some of our, I suppose, particularly maybe vulnerable or elderly population as well. And it looks like we're certainly going to have a substantial amount of warm weather during this week.
Structurally, it doesn't have any impact, does it, as such? But also too, and we can get back to those warnings, I'm mindful of, you know, land drying out, the risk of fire and what have you. Again, you know, the fire service would be responsible for dealing with that. If we're out and about, I'm thinking of these portable barbecues on dry grass, that kind of stuff. We really need our emergency services to be available for other types of emergencies, don't we?
Yeah, unfortunately, this time of year, you will see a lot of these, what would you call it, recreation-associated fires taking place. And look, what, again, you know, the normal thing that we have to appeal to people, you know, first of all, do not be, you know, lighting backyard fires. You know, do not be lighting scrub on land. Do not, if you do have an outdoor barbecue or external cooking elements, do not discard the remnants of it behind you, because those barbecues, by their nature, the embers will remain, I suppose, warm and hot for many, many hours. And I suppose, look, unfortunately, again, this time of year, whilst there's less of a risk, given that we have a lot of green grass out there now, in certain parts of the county, there's a substantial fire load, you know, particularly in our upland areas, scenic areas, and particularly in our forests. And when you have a fire commencing in that at this time of year with these high temperatures, it can be quite problematic. So look, you know, don't light fires anywhere near the woodland. Don't block forest entrances or roads where parking, etc., because we may need to access that through the fire service in the event of an emergency.
And of course, we are blessed with fantastic a fantastic coastline, wonderful inland waters. Before we talk about safety in the water, a little bugbear of mine. Again, it's about emergency services. You know, the blocking of piers, slipways, the abuse of yellow boxes in these spaces. Yeah. You know, seconds count. This could be life and death stuff.
Absolutely. Look, I mean, first of all, it's the worst of bad manners at the very, very least to be blocking. Yellow boxes are there for a reason. Hatched areas are there for a reason because they need to be accessed in the event of an emergency. And none of us would want to have it on our conscience that we blocked an area that might have delayed any of our emergency response agencies, whether it's the Coast Guard, RNLA, Fire Service, National Ambulance Service, etc., and getting to people that really need that. So again, you know, take the extra 30 seconds, a minute, park where you're supposed to park, you know, park safely and walk to, you know, the, as you say, the many wonderful areas of recreation that we have along our coastline.
Yes, many people will go to the water. It has to be said, though, the water heats up an awful lot more slowly than the air temperature, and it's still blooming freezing out there. If you're not used to it, we've got a huge population of open water swimmers, and they know the crack. But we do also have an awful lot of safe places for people to enjoy the water, you know, manned blue flag beaches, etc. So we can go out there, we can have fun, but do so safely. And if you can, please, especially with an easterly, avoid these floating toys, particularly in open water, because they are a potential death trap.
Unfortunately, Greg, this time of year, we do see an increase in instances of drownings. And look, that's the last thing we want. You know, kids particularly, they love the water. You know, and they're drawn to the water, particularly during periods of warm weather. You know, it's nearly impossible to keep them out of the water. But I think your comments are well made. You know, these, particularly these floating lilos and tubes and so on and so forth. You know, if you are using them, then they should be under immediate parental or adult supervision at all times. At all times, because as you say, it only takes just a little bit of a gust of wind and you're out into the water. The other issue as well is, like, our strong recommendation is, you know, only swim in areas where there are beach lifeguards. They're there for a reason. They're there for your safety. They're there to ensure that you can, you know, enjoy the area. And if there are instances where, for example, it may be dangerous to swim, they put up the relevant flags in relation to that. The other point I'd like to make as well, you know, we do have areas, beach areas in County Donegal, that are more challenging than others to swim in. So, for example, there's lots of areas that have riptides, you know, that can, you know, pull in an experienced swimmer actually out to sea. And it is a challenge. And, you know, people panic. You know, they don't swim parallel to the shore until they get out of the riptide. They panic and then they find themselves in trouble. So, look, just be very, very cautious. You know, if, particularly if you have children, you know, have adult supervision at all times in those areas, and ensure, in as far as possible, to swim in areas where there are beach lifeguards in place.
OK, thanks very much, Gary. Look after yourself. That's Gary Martin, Director of Economic Development and Emergency Services. So the message coming out from this show is enjoy it. Enjoy the weather. I mean, we're going to be looking on at perhaps arguably better weather down the country, but we have some nice weather. But enjoy it. Get out. Have fun. But just do so safely. It's just common sense advice, I suppose. Pat McCart is the former editor of the Derry Journal, and he joins me now. Hiya, Pat.
I'm grand. Thanks very much, Greg.
It's great to have you on the programme. Right now, of course, Pat McCart, I did mention, didn't I, former editor of the Derry Journal. Your reaction to the Jeffrey Donaldson conviction, I mean, it's huge, isn't it, given his profile and position in Northern Ireland politics?
Greg, when you consider the fact he was elected, I think, the first time when he was 22, you know, way back, God knows, he was Lagan Valley MP for 27 years. He was the longest serving Unionist MP. He was leader of the DUP. I don't know what else. Like, the impact on the DUP long term could be unbelievable, in the sense that this guy has, you know, everybody probably remembers, at least I do, a famous, during the Good Friday Agreement, with the snow sort of falling around, he walked away and left. And everybody thought he was going out to his car to get some documents or something, but he actually drove away. He basically deserted David Trumbull. But anyway, Trumbull had the nerve to go ahead and sign the Good Friday Agreement. But that was one of the big moments of recent history. And the fact that he then subsequently, and I think about 2004, left the UUP and joined the DUP, that basically broadened the base big time of the DUP and gave them cachet in certain areas that they didn't have before. So the implications for the for unionism in particular, but the sorry, in general, but the DUP in particular, about Greg Geoffrey Donaldson is unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, it was a long trial, but it was based on historical sex offences. So I think we could say the majority of the evidence was based on the victim's recollections versus Geoffrey Donaldson's recollections. That being said, there was this letter, and there was a meeting also, but there was this letter that it was never contested whether it existed or not, where Donaldson apologised for his actions. And I imagine that must have been key to the jury. We don't know, obviously, we haven't heard from them, but that was one of the few pieces of physical evidence.
Yeah, Greg, I don't know about you, but I've yet to hear the explanation what that letter was about.
No, I was saying that just before you came on. It was never, as far as I could see in the reporting, it was, if it wasn't about this, Jeffrey, what was this letter about? Unrelated
Yeah,
matters, all I heard.
exactly. I think you've used the exact phrase in court. It was said it was about an unrelated matter. But you know the whole thing, and like I'm not an expert on the law or the evidence or whatever. But first of all, there was this letter apologizing for something. So what was he apologizing for? Secondly, there was these disclosures at the Christian Center on a number of occasions. There was one of the witnesses said on evidence, one of the people at the Christian Center who said that was the one of the complainants disclosed to, I think, himself and his wife that she had been abused. But then when asked, he said he couldn't remember if Geoffrey Donaldson's name was actually used, but he said he was 100% certain that they were talking about Geoffrey Donaldson. But the thing about it, Greg, I think what a lot of people say, Geoffrey Donaldson, I remember as a reporter in the North for years, Geoffrey Donaldson had this sort of, and I don't mean this the way it sounds, but he had that Daniel O'Donnell persona. And with great respect to Daniel, and he had that look about him. I remember a reporter said he was very nice to talk to, very easy to get along with, very affable, and he looked like a choir boy, that sort of good, clean image and all the rest of it. And I think it's come as a massive shock to a lot of people that this Geoffrey Donaldson, the person that they thought they knew, is not the person that came across in court.
No, and also too, there were disclosures in relation to his infidelity within his marriage as well, which further blackens his character.
Yeah, his wife was so, what would you say, suspicious of activity that she bugged his car. I know that, I think we're the same. It applies. We're so used to the persona in public that sometimes things like this, we sort of go, what? Did we miss all this? And I think that's a perfect thing with Greg here. This is the one, sometimes as one of my brothers used to say, it's the quiet ones you have to worry about. And Greg, Geoffrey Donalds had never had that. Never went with his personality. He was like he got a like when you consider it, he was first elected as Lagan Valley MP in what was it, 1997. He was elected, I think, six or seven times. He always topped the poll. I remember on occasions he used to go around with a Bible, and he used to. And I remember he used to sing "God Save the King or the Queen" as it was then, and so on. And there was always this fervent sort of, Christianity thing about him, and so on. So I think the it's a shock for a lot of people. And the fact it was a bombshell. The morning I remember that it said Geoffrey Donaldson has resigned and has been arrested in regards with historic sex abuse charges. I think, I nearly fell off my chair. He was, but it would have been the last person. Most of us would have thought so.
What do you understand as it relates to his wife? She has been found guilty, I suppose you could say, but she hasn't been found guilty. It was never made clear to me, is she in custody? Is she seeking help for her mental health? Was it determined that she was in sound mind when she was complicit? Can she be charged in the future, or can she face sentence in the future if she's found to be mentally fit to do so? Again, and no harm to the reporting, but massive obvious questions that I simply can't find answers to.
I don't think so, Judah. Greg, I think you can only be tried once for an offence of this nature. She's tried on the facts, if I think that's the legal way of putting it. She could be found guilty of the facts, but she couldn't be found guilty of a criminal offence. Mm. And I don't think they can do anything. Apparently, her mental health has deteriorated so much, probably under the stress of all this, that she was deemed unfit for a normal trial. So I don't think it's going to happen down the road. I think this is the end of it.
Now, senior unionists are calling for Geoffrey Donaldson's knighthood and membership of the Privy Council to be removed. I presume that's a matter of course.
That's going to happen, yeah. There's no way anybody that's been in, you know, and the judge said yesterday he can prepare for a long sentence. You know, his career, you know, there's two things, you know, and the annals of history, Geoffrey Donaldson is going to be remembered for a very long political career and how it ended.
And I suppose just on reflection, you know, often power or even the Bible have been used as almost shields by some people to exploit younger people, to abuse younger people. Hopefully this sends a message out to victims who perhaps thought they will or might think they will never achieve justice, that, you know, the courts can work at times, and it seems they've worked in this case.
Absolutely. You know, Greg, it went on. I think the jury went out on Thursday and they spent a good bit of Friday and then they were sent home at the weekend. In fact, I got to admit, maybe that's a cynic in me because I've seen so much in the North about, you know, big political figures seem to be able to get away with a lot of stuff. I got to admit, I had my doubts that he'd be found guilty. You know, given the power and the prestige and the background. But yesterday I was just sitting here and I was sort of half, I think I was reading the book and it came in, Sir Geoffrey Donaldson found guilty on all 18, charges. That came as, and the first ones found guilty of rape. That was the first one I read, you know, and it was quite shocking in a sense. And I was surprised too, you know. It was a very strange sort of trial, Greg. I don't think there's anybody can deny that. It came out of the blue, and here's a man now. Like as I said earlier, the judge said he's facing a long time in jail. What a fall from grace! From one stage, being a knight of the Privy Council, lauded by various prime ministers, on the front door of 10 Downing Street. A long career started when he was 22, and it was, you know, and so on and so on. And now, as we speak, he's languishing in McGabbery Jail.
Just finally, you know, time really makes a big difference in all of these types of things. Does this have any ongoing ramifications for the DUP, or can they just be as shocked as you are or I am, you know, condemn him to high heavens and distance themselves from him, and everything will continue as normal?
I think it will, Greg. I genuinely think it will. I already see Jim Allister has stated that he wants to know, was Geoffrey Donaldson compromised by the British intelligence services to agree the Windsor framework document, that they have the dirt on him for some time? Now, that's not exactly a lovely sort of way to go from Jim Allister, but that's the nature of Northern Ireland politics. And as well as that, and as you well know as well, Greg, the DUP is made up of a lot of very deep, well, I would almost use the term fundamentalist Christians, people who are very much into their Bibles and all the rest of it. And it's a lot of them see the world through very much black and white prisms. They see either the good guy or the bad guy. And I think, what do you call him, Robinson, the current leader, is going to have a hell of a time dampening this one down. And I think the long-term implications for the DUP are not good, definitely not good. And I think the implications for maybe unionism aren't that great as well.
Okay. Thank you very much indeed, as always, Pat. I appreciate it. Former editor of the Derry Journal, Pat McCart there. Some of your comments coming in so far this morning. Hi, Greg. Where are the riots now on the streets of Belfast, where a child rapist and one of their leaders get sent to prison? More hypocrisy. If the riots were not about race and actually about protecting communities, they would have been out rioting last night. Clearly shows the racist nature of the far right. Okay, if you are white, it seems. Another, Donaldson's only the tip of the iceberg. Much more to come out, I would say, says that listener. On the weather, Greg, I went to school in the 60s and 70s and the weather got warmer from St. Patrick's weekend and stayed until the end of August. It was very hot and that warm that I had to go to the river to get water for the cattle in 45-gallon drums with the tractor and link box. The weather was so warm at that time, the tar was bubbling on the roads coming in from Union. Yeah, and I would speak to people in sort of the fishing and farming communities quite regularly. It's an interesting conversation about climate change because they would do what Eunan's done, what I have done, and sort of look back to their childhood and incredibly hot days, incredibly warm spells of weather, and say it was always like that. But then at the same breath, or in the same breath, they will talk about how fishing has changed, that, you know, shellfish are later in the year or early in the year, or the fishing's bad, or the mackerel are late, or the mackerel are small, and all that type of stuff. Or, you know, you used to get two or three cuts, now you're lucky if you get one, two. Now, I know there are factors, don't get me wrong, but on one hand, you might hear them say, well, you know, it was always like this, but then on the other, concede that things are changing, and not in 1 year or 1 week or one day of a week, but in seasons, when the sea calms, when the sea comes up, when the grass grows, when it doesn't, etc. So I would be of the view that the climate is changing. How dramatically and why it's changing, I've yet to be fully convinced. But anyway, as a severe asthmatic, I'm very thankful for the weather warnings and advice. And thank you for that. That's why I put that question out there, because I wanted to know if it was welcomed or otherwise. So that's good to hear. Righty-o, 086 60 25,000, that's the WhatsApp and the text number. Now, we discussed extensively on the programme yesterday the crimes and conviction of Patrick Sharkey. Michael Bacon joins him now. Michael was a victim of Sharkey. Michael, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
How are you? And you know, as a society and as an individual, I'm so sorry for what you went through when you should have been looked after, when he should have been enhanced, you know, and this disgusting individual took away your innocence and did this stuff to you, and I'm sure the lasting and ongoing impact that has. I'm just really sorry that you and the other lads had to be, you know, were put through this and had to endure that and have to do what you're doing right now.
I think there's probably two parts to it. Yeah, you're right about the first part of it, but, you know, it was such a long time ago. It's for me, anyway, it was over 40 years ago, but it was traumatic, it was harrowing, and all the things you just said there. But I think from my point of view and most of the other guys' point of view, what we did and ended up reporting him down to the police in Donegal, it had to be done. And I do get a sense of justice, I do get a sense of giving myself a pat on the back for and the other guys for having the courage and the determination to see this through, because it's been going on now for 4 or 5 years. It was just after just during lockdown when we first made our complaints down to the Garda in Donegal. So yeah, it's been a bit of a long journey.
Yeah, well done to you. It is an incredible thing to do. What are your memories of him and how he perpetrated his abuse, Michael?
Well, for me, I'm one of the older ones of the group that it happened to, because his perpetrating lasted over 25 years. But for me, I started in St. Joseph's School at 1978, Stoke 79, around the same time that he started there. And very quickly, we all saw him as a very charismatic leader. He was extremely talented in scuba diving, canoeing, orienteering, and all the outdoor things that young boys and young people like to get involved in. So for me, at the start, it was about him taking us to do like rambles and walks. But he first came to know us. He used to come into the changing rooms when we were at school, and now the teachers had their own changing rooms. But he would have come in and he had to get changed in front of us and stuff like that. So for most of the guys involved, I know he was the first adult that we saw naked. Then he started to chance his arm a wee bit and groom me a bit more. We used to go to Korean Leisure Centre in the evenings once a week. We would have done practice diving and canoeing and he would have come into the showers afterwards with no clothes on, and showered with you and hugged you, saying the water's it's really cold down here, and he was aroused as well at the time he was doing that, and then that progressed to inviting us down to his family home in Clemane. And as I said in court that day, we were like kids heading up. We were young working class kids from the Heights Estates in Coleraine, and we thought we were going on our holidays, so he would invited you down to Clemane. But when we got down there, we very quickly realised that, you know, there was two double beds in two different rooms, and there was only three kids, so one of us had to sleep with them. So from my point of view, when I was there, he said there was three of us there, and the other two guys were called D-men. So he said, right, the two D-men's, you're in that room, and Michael, you're in with me. So I had to share a room with him for two nights, where he jumped into a bed naked and spent the night either fending off his unwanted advances or lying there frozen with fear. So that's how that kind of came about for me.
Yeah, and as a 13, 14-year-old, it's clear he was already grooming, he was already setting the stage for this. This was part of his plan. But as that child, how conscious of you of what was going on, sort of right or wrong, or you know, how much you felt that you could, you know, maybe divulge to your friends or an adult?
Well, I didn't tell anybody for a long time. There was another guy went down after us, and when he was in the bed with him, he swung a punch at him, and then other people got to hear about it. So there was two sides to that. When I came back, first of all, as a young boy, there was the humiliation and of what happened to me, and then secondly, there was the fear of other people finding out, because the other boy that it happened to, he got a lot of stick and a lot of, you know, verbal abuse about what happened to him. He was called a lot of names. So for the rest of us, he didn't want to say anything, so I kept it to myself for about, I don't know, 35 years until I told my wife.
Wow. What impact did it have on you throughout your life until that time that you divulged it?
To be honest with you, I kind of put it to the back of my mind.
Yeah.
I left school, as all of us did. We left school with no education. Everybody that was involved in this case, there's a common denominator there that all of us left school with no qualifications. So that was the first thing. Left school with nothing, and I had to kind of pick myself up and start again after that. And then as a teenager back in the 80s, you know, you did a lot of things like, you know, antisocial behaviour, glue sniffing, getting into a lot of fights. So it had that kind of impact on me for about 4 or 5 years, until such times as I thought, right, I need to do something with my life here. And I went back to night school and did different things. I currently am a manager in a centre for adults with learning disabilities, Korean. So, but it took a while for me to pull myself together. But the most overriding thing was, I put it to the back of my mind, try to think about it. But education-wise, I spent about 10 or 12 years trying to get myself to the level of education that I felt I should have had at the school. And, you know, there was no support from the school either. There was nothing. So, and quite a lot of them turned a blind eye.
And I'll get to that in a moment, but it's clear this person was very manipulative and knew the story and had a modus operandi, because, you know, as you said, whoever spoke out before, their life was made a misery. So you kept it to yourself. The only thing you could do was avoid similar situations again. And my understanding, Michael, is that you did, but you still had to share the same building with him for the rest of your school years. Can you talk me through what that was like for you?
He was in the school still, and you know, and what happened there, because it was like a conveyor belt. So once we got a wee bit older, maybe 15, then he discarded us, and then he was moving on to the younger groups that were coming through the school. But it was conscious of the fact that he was always there, and he was a very charismatic man. He walked around the school with brogue shoes and cravats and corduroy trousers and big massive diver watches before they became fashionable. And you know, he was such a charismatic man, and if he came into a room, he was the guy that everybody noticed in the room, but for the wrong reasons.
Did you think you were the only one at that time, Michael, or would you have been conscious as a young teen? And again, some of this might have been just compartmentalised to protect your own mental well-being, but did you consider that you weren't the one and only, and that he was sort of an ongoing abuser, an ongoing paedophile?
I want Funny, that is one of the things that came out when we were in court in Donegal with all the other victims, because we used to go down under a room before the court was called and we all had a chat, and most of them all said that they always thought they were the only one.
Yeah.
But never, ever did I think I was the only one. I don't know whether I was savvy enough. I don't know when I was down there was other boys that I know it was happening to, but never for one moment did I think I was the only person. In actual fact, I did feel even as a teenager that there was a lot more people than me, so I never felt like that.
But the other lads that you were chatting to, there was a sense that it was just them,
Yeah,
and him
sort of, yeah.
isolating them and what have you. It wasn't in the way he was manipulating people. It wasn't hundreds, a group of 100 boys and more. It was 100 groups of one boy, if you know what I mean. That's obviously how he felt he could get away with it for so
Yeah.
long.
And when you quote them numbers at over 100, I know he only was charged with 19, but I know we all are 99% sure that there is over 100. And when you're saying there, did I think it was only one? No, I didn't think I was only one. But when we were sitting in the court for a few days, it just like hit me like a ton of bricks thinking about when we had to listen to all the charges, every charge, but towards the end of the reading out of the charges, it just kind of dawned on me about how prolific he was, how sadistic he was, how he was a risk taker. He took risks all the time. And sadly as it sounds, about how he had such an insatiable appetite for young boys, because some of the young boys, one of the guys told me last week, he was abused 4 times in the space of half an hour.
Unbelievable.
So that was the thing when I came out of the court, which I thought how prolific he was. But like, it was nearly every other weekend. Had different boys down there, and this went on for 20 odd years without anybody doing anything about it.
Yeah, well, there are opportunities for people to do something about it. God knows how many boys could have avoided being abused if concerns raised about him had been treated as serious as they might be. And that really is what's next. That's an important thing, isn't it, Michael, to find out how he was able to get away with it so long, even when authorities were told that something was going on, and to make sure it can't happen again.
Absolutely. Like two of my friends, it happened to them. And one, the guy I spoke about that hit him, hit both of their parents, went into the school as long ago as 1980. I'm not sure, 1982, 1983. Both sets of parents were in at different times and voiced concerns about his behaviour. And the teachers and the headmaster then palmed them off by saying, "Do you know how expensive it would be to get solicitors and all this kind of stuff?" So that was back in the early 80s. And yeah, there was countless opportunities, and they sum all that up. When we were down in court, I met a guy who was involved, and he looked a lot younger than me. And I asked him what age he was, and he says 43. And I quickly did the maths, and I worked out I was 58. And I kind of then again I worked out that he was only being born when I was being abused.
Wow.
So a whole childhood and span of, it happened. And by the time he came around to being getting abused when he was 13 or 14, I was married with a family. So that gives you an indication of the time frame involved here and how you got away with it.
He never showed any remorse in either trial.
No, we never looked at any of us when I did my victim impact statement. I looked at him, and the last thing I said to him was, "Sharky, your behaviour had an impact on my life, but it certainly didn't define it. I have a good job, I have a loving wife, I have a family, I have a good network of peers, and my life has turned out well. But that's no thanks to him, for what happened to me back then." But and he never looked up. He never really acknowledged any of this. He pretended. I think he pretended he was more incapable than that, than what he was. He was hunched over and pretended. In my opinion, anyway, pretended he was quite ill in
No, we've
the
seen
dock
that.
when he.
We've seen that. It's to try and garner sympathy, even if you can't avoid the conviction, to try and avoid
Yeah,
any
but
custodial sentence. He continued to manipulate clearly in the courtroom.
Absolutely, and I asked the guards when we had our final meeting with the guards, the detectives. I asked him, did he show any remorse? And the answer he gave me, which was quite clinical, Michael, he pleaded guilty, but as far as and he accepts what he did was wrong, with in regards to remorse, not a lot, no.
Every one of his victims' experiences is going to be different, Michael. Your experience versus other people that you spoke to. And then there's going to be people that either have completely blocked it or are living with it and have never made a complaint. And I'm wondering how they're feeling, today, where, maybe they have feel they've got some sort of a justice, but it's completely anonymous. Maybe it's made their situation worse emotionally for them, or maybe it's given them some sort of a respite from it. But anyway, anyone affected by either Sharkey or anyone, and unfortunately this was very prevalent at a time, you know, it's always good to get out and get some help and have a conversation, Michael, even if you're not going to pursue charges or what have you.
Absolutely. He was sentenced on the Thursday, and I come into work on the Friday morning, and somebody rang me and said, there's a guy who went to St. Joseph's with you 40 years ago, wants to have a chat with you. Mm. So that was the next day, and I spoke to a guy who was quite emotional on the phone about he was groomed and abused as well. So I had a chat with him, and then on Friday night I got a friend's request from somebody else who I went to school with, and I was quite surprised at him. And as soon as I accepted the friend's request, I knew what was coming next.
Yeah.
And then he told me it happened to him, but he didn't have the courage to stand up. And for me, you know, Paddy Sharkey getting sentenced is only part of it, but doing what we did, I would like to think that some people, you know, can find some comfort in what we did and maybe feel the courage to go to the guards and report them myself, because this story is definitely not over.
No, I just hope that you don't have to drag the truth out, that the power that be recognised, the powers that be recognise what yous have all have gone through here to fore, and that, you know, there's no filibustering or trying to avoid the answers that hopefully could, for some of you at least, if not the most of you, allow you to say, right, we've got justice from him, and we've also got justice in terms of the safeguarding that simply wasn't there. Michael, thank you so much for joining us. I really do appreciate it. And the best with everything into the future.
No problem. Thanks very much.
All right. Bye-bye. Look after yourself. Michael Bacon there, who was a victim of Patrick Sharkey, 83 years of age, sentenced to 6 years in prison. And whilst people might say, well, 6 years, that's nothing, he has already served some time in the North, but also factoring in his age and maybe it could be effectively a full life sentence. But that's Michael Bacon there. 086 60 25 000. That's our WhatsApp and text number. If you want to give us a call, it's 07491 25 000. Or if email is your preference, feel free to email us comments at highlandradio.com. The latest Greg Hughes podcast will be released on Friday. An interesting guest, Dinny McGinley, former TD. He's an interesting man and has had an interesting life. It's a very interesting conversation. We'll tell you more about that as the week wears on.
The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Now, welcome back to the programme. Coming up shortly, we've got Community Garda information, where we've got the very latest appeals and information from Angada Shia Conn and Donegal first here on this programme, so stay tuned for that. Catching up on some of your comments here, Donaldson found guilty. Well done, Judge Ramsey. Can be sure there's more than two. None of their experiences are pleasant, far from it. Sharkey's school should be brought to book big time. Well, it was the... In fairness to the guilty plea for Donaldson, it was the jury that found him guilty, wasn't it? Hi, Greg. In regards to the sexual abuse, I've been waiting over 20 years now for the guards to take a statement from me regarding sexual abuse I suffered as a child. I've made numerous attempts at contacting them regarding this. What I'm saying is a lot of people out there are probably in the same boat as myself and are probably still waiting to be heard. I commend your courage, Michael. There's something fundamentally wrong there if you are making allegations or a complaint of abuse and your statement is not being taken. I don't know what station you're going to. I don't know who you're engaging with, but that shouldn't be the case. So I don't know. I don't know, obviously, your information or who you are. So I can't offer any advice other than to say you need to go to a different station or speak to someone else then. On Geoffrey Donaldson, he always looked like a smug pea, hiding behind his so-called law. Don't make me laugh. Same with priests and the clergy, mostly misfits of society hiding behind a so-called God, please, and her praying the mental health card. What I will say is that these people are incredibly exploitative. They're paedophiles. That's what they are. They're born paedophiles. And they will get themselves into positions that give them most access to children. So I understand that it sounds like you don't have a faith or don't believe in it, or maybe your faith has been eroded or whatever it might be. But, you know, the religion doesn't make these people. These people find their way into religion. And Donaldson walking around holding that Bible, creating this persona that, well, he's got a Bible. He could never do that. These people are incredibly manipulative and they find themselves into positions of abuse. They don't randomly become you know, someone who's very heavily involved in the Scouts, or someone who is a swimming coach. You know, they find them, get themselves into that position and exploit it. And I think just it's important that there are very good people, whether you believe in their faith or not, there are very good people of faith, and the majority of them are, and the majority of them stand with you and condemn what Donaldson's doing. And, you know, I think it's important we focus on the individual, because he was exploiting the church, not the other way around, in my opinion. Hi, Greg, could you ask the council if the two islands at the entrance to the ED are permanent, as I've just seen the ambulance having to drive up on them to get into the ED? Utter madness. Wow. I hope that's not the case. Right now, members of the 100% Redress Party are heading to Leinster House today for a briefing with TDs and senators ahead of the introduction of a private members' bill to amend the defective concrete block scheme by the party's TD, Deputy Charles Ward. I suppose, Councillor Joy Beard, it can be quite frustrating. It can be quite difficult to sort of get clear answers to even some of the most fundamental of questions. When you look or get an opportunity to look in the eyes and get the answers, it's very useful.
Yeah, very much so. And that's what today is about as well, Greg. You know, we're going down. This is where our decision makers are. And I think ultimately, telling the true life stories and what people are experiencing, you know, and hopefully the TDs and senators will all show up today at the AV room for the presentation. We have Professor Paul up, along from the University of Ulster, and also Chris.
Yeah, okay. Joy, listen, I'm going to let you go. We might try that a little later on, but obviously you're travelling down there and the phone line just is not of a standard, and I don't feel it's improving. But we have this covered on the news and we'll certainly discuss it tomorrow after the meeting. But just to recap there, members of 100% Redress Party, they're down meeting the people you may have heard Joy mention there to try and, I suppose, get the point across as to what they're trying to do or what we're trying to do up here, and to get the message across to that this problem hasn't gone away. It's not fixed. Okay, thanks for that. Talking about the climate. Hi, Greg. You're on about climate change. The words climate always changed and always will. That's the way the world works. Why can't people see that if the climate never changed, the world would be a sad place? I understand. But you see, what the debate is it about how much of what we do influences that or speeds it up? You know, there are large swathes of this world that are going to become uninhabitable very soon. And those people are going to have to go somewhere. And they're going to come to Europe and they're going to go to other places where the climate is quite moderate. So really, especially climate migration, you know, that is coming. That is coming because these are human beings that will not be able to live in some of these places. We talk here about, oh, it's 28 degrees or, oh, it's been raining for a week, it always rains. That's not really the climate change we're talking about. We're talking about people in 55 degrees heat who say, well, we can't be here anymore. We have to go somewhere else where it's safe to raise our families. And you can either try and slow that down by making some changes, or you can say, we can't change it and just batter on. Do you get me? Right.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, monitoring homes and businesses in the Northwest for intruder, fire, panic and medical signals. Call Sheridan Security on 91-26025.
And you're very welcome along to Community Garda information here on The Greg Hughes Show. And we love our regular guests to get the information out to you. But it's also great to see new people coming on board. And for the first time, we welcome onto the programme Garda Pádraig McFadden from Letterkenny Garda Station. Pádraig, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Really appreciate you calling up. We've got quite a bit to get through. So we'll start with the ongoing investigation into that tragic incident at the rally.
Yes, Greg. So Gardaí continues to investigate the sudden death of 15-year-old Tadhg Callaghan Carter following an incident at a motorsport event in Donegal on Saturday, the 20th of June 2026. Shortly before 5 p.m, emergency services and Gardaí were alerted following an incident involving a participating vehicle at Trenta, close to Kilmacrenan, on location 15 on Special Stage 12, which is the Gartan stage. A spectator, a male in his mid-teens, was conveyed to Letterkenny University Hospital, where unfortunately he was later pronounced deceased. Gardaí are appealing for witnesses who were present at location 15, Special Stage 12, Gartan, on Saturday the 20th of June 2026, particularly those maybe who have mobile phone footage or dashcam footage in the area, to contact Gardaí. Anyone with information is asked to contact Letterkenny Garda Station on 074 9167 100 or the Garda Confidential Line on 1800 666 111.
Investigations ongoing in relation to a recent criminal damage incident in Convoy.
That's correct, Greg. Gardaí are currently investigating an incident of criminal damage that occurred in the area of Greenfields and Convoy on Monday the 22nd of June between approximately 6:30 a.m. and 7 a.m. A male who was dressed in grey tracksuit, a black jacket and wearing a black face mask entered the garden of a property in that area between those times. He made his way to the front door of the house where he smashed the glass on the front door. He then proceeded to where the car was parked at the side of the house and caused considerable damage to the vehicle by striking the bonnet and smashing the window. Again, we appeal to anybody who may have travelled in the Greenfields or General Convoy area between 6 a.m. and 7:30 a.m. On the 22nd of June, who may have dashcam footage, or to make that footage available to us. And if anyone can offer any other relevant information, Greg, they're asked to contact Ballyshannon Garda Station on 071 985 8530 or again the Garda Confidential line on 1800 666 111.
Yeah, so it's broad daylight, 6:30 a.m. Very distinctive, I would argue. Grey tracksuit, black jacket. Did you see anything before, during or afterwards in the Convoy area? Now, let us go to an e-scooter theft, the latest in actually a series of e-scooter thefts, this in Letterkenny.
Yes, Greg, so we're appealing for information in connection with a theft incident that occurred at the retail park area of Letterkenny on Thursday the 18th of June. An e-scooter had been locked to a barrier at that location by the owner at approximately 4:30 p.m. They returned 4 hours later at 8:30 p.m. to discover that the e-scooter had been stolen. The e-scooter in question is a black Segway 9-bot E2 Pro scooter. If anyone can assist us with relevant information about this theft of the e-scooter in relation to its current whereabouts, we ask them to contact Gardaí in Letterkenny on 074-91-67100. Or should anyone come across maybe a similar e-scooter for sale on a second-hand basis and maybe it's going cheap and you believe it's too good to be true, so quite often it is, just let us know, we can check it out.
Yeah, and presumably there had to be some sort of a cut made or something, and it was in daylight hours again, so hopefully someone saw something. Those things are not cheap. Theft from a vehicle next.
Yes, Greg, so Gardaí are also investigating a theft incident which occurred at the area of Loch Salt Road in Kilmacrenan on Sunday the 21st of June. Again, between 3:30 p.m. and 5 p.m, a man had parked his car at that location and gone for a walk. When he returned, he discovered that wrapped Father's Day gift that he had in the boot of the car containing a watch and other items had been stolen. There was no sign of any forced entry or damage caused to the vehicle. We appeal for anyone who may have travelled in that area at those times on Sunday the 21st of June between 3:30 and 5 p.m. if they have any dash cam, maybe to make that footage available to us.
Yeah, busy road that at the weekend. So someone passed either while or very close to before or after when that happened. There's just no doubt, because such is the traffic, especially at this time of the year and for the weekend that was in it. So if you've seen anything or believe you might have caught anything between those times, you just contact the Gardaí and they come and download the footage. By the way, you don't have to start scanning and become an investigator yourself. Another car theft, or theft from a car, I should say, this time in Inishowen, Patrick.
Yes, Greg. So we're seeking assistance of the public again in the connection with a theft incident that occurred in a car park in the Lisfan area of Buncrana. So the vehicle was parked on the left-hand side of the road on the way into Buncrana town from the Fawn direction on Friday the 19th of June at approximately 4:50 p.m. The passenger side window of this vehicle was smashed and a grey Marc Jacobs handbag and purse were stolen from within the vehicle. We appeal to anyone again who may have observed a male in that area around that time who was wearing a black jacket, black bottoms and a black baseball cap to get in touch with Gardaí in Buncrana on 074-93-20540. Or if anyone is travelling along that route, it's the main road into Buncrana there, it's the R238. May have dashcam footage to make that footage available to us also.
And your colleagues in Inishowen are also investigating a burglary in Burnfoot.
That's correct, Greg. Gardaí are investigating a burglary that occurred in the house in the area of Teeve Ban in Burnfoot there in the early hours of Wednesday the 17th of June, where a side window of a house was smashed and entry was gained. A number of items were disturbed around the house, but nothing is believed to have been stolen, Greg. We are particularly interested in hearing from any drivers who have a dash cam and maybe have travelled in that area between 1 a.m. and 3 a.m. on that date. If anyone observed three youths carrying torches, one of the youths was on a bike in that area between those times, we asked them to contact Gardaí in Buncrana on 074-93-20540.
Yeah, and again, Padraig, it's not just necessarily in the act, isn't it? You know, three people out on bikes, maybe one or two with a torch. Yeah. You don't have to witness the incident. It's exactly, the information that becomes incredibly invaluable, and it adds to the information Ungoldishy O'Connor will have already began gathering. Yes. And the burglary in Rathmullen now, where this is more of a general date.
Yes, Greg, so a burglary that occurred in a house in the area of Kinnegar Road in Rathmullen between 4pm on Thursday the 18th of June and 9:30pm on Saturday the 20th of June, where the front door of a house had been forced open and damaged. Entry was gained and a couple of fire extinguishers were set off within the property, causing damage to various items such as the flooring, pictures and lamps. Nothing was stolen from the house. We appeal to anyone who may be able to assist us with relevant information to contact Gardaí in Milford on 07491 53060. We want to hear from anybody who may have observed any type of suspicious activity in that area on those dates.
Brilliant stuff. I bet you regret putting your water on the floor now. Do you want to sup while I set up the next question? It's completely up to you. Right, so here is a question from last week, and Padraig's good enough to have an answer for us. I witnessed an incident recently, and I did catch it on dash cam. Could you explain what happens when I submit this footage to the Gardaí? Do I have to give the device or just download it? Do I have to give evidence in a case should it make court? Interesting, I referenced this earlier and I didn't know this question was coming up. So good information to get out because, you know, dash cam is playing such a critical part in investigations now. So what happens?
So yeah, Greg, so the caller can either hand the device in or we can get the device downloaded. And then once this is done, a statement would then be taken from the person by Gardaí to say that they've provided us with the footage. They could possibly then be called to give evidence if the matter goes before the court, as their statement would form part of the investigation file. So if it did go to court, then they may be required to give evidence.
And that, I suppose, would just be say, yep, that's my footage.
Yeah, that's it.
Might not have seen what's
exactly,
on it. It would just be to validate it.
Corroborate the footage.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If it got to that point. Right, okay. So obviously, on the roads and off the roads as well, the rally is the biggest policing operation on the West Coast, I would imagine, certainly in the Northwest. And it was a busy time for enforcement, of course.
Yes, Greg, the rally weekend is always a very busy time for Gardaí, both on and off the roads. As I say, Gardaí were right across the Donegal Division over the entire weekend, conducting checkpoints and extra patrols. In Letterkenny, between Thursday the 18th of June and Monday the 22nd of June, there were a total of 116 arrests for various types of incidents. So in Letterkenny then, where most of the crowd had gathered between Thursday and Monday, Gardaí dealt with 86 incidents of public order by means of either arrest or fines. 23 drink and drug drivers were arrested over the weekend, 8 drivers were arrested on suspicion of dangerous driving, and 22 vehicles were seized for various reasons, such as dangerous driving, having no insurance, no NCT, or being deemed dangerous or defective. That was just in Letterkenny. And within the county then, we had a total of 42 vehicles seized for the same.
It's astonishing, isn't it? I mean, that's a huge level of enforcement. Just to recap, 23 drunk or drug drivers were arrested. So that's people driving under the influence. 8 people arrested for suspicion of dangerous driving, and 22 vehicles seized for various weekends. But there are other calls as well. I think, did you mention, you know, there's other stuff that we see continues?
So over the weekend, obviously, policing continues for all our other kind of offences and everything we do as well on a day-to-day basis. So Gardaí, we dealt with a number of different types of offences as well. We dealt with such as domestic incidents, assaults, criminal damage and road traffic collisions. These are things that occur every day on a daily thing for us.
Yeah. And now, whilst the figures in terms of the rally-related activity, and we know it's the majority of people that that sort of come to be around the rally and not necessarily follow it, we are talking multiples of thousands of people. And it has to be said, the overwhelming majority of those come up and cause no hassle whatsoever, have the crack with the Gardaí and work with them. And I suppose that's appreciated.
Yeah, definitely, Greg. I mean, probably up to 50,000 maybe minimum in around Donegal for the weekend. We also thank the majority of the people who visited our county over the weekend for their compliance and cooperation as always. We had thousands of visitors here, and the majority were law-abiding and a pleasure to deal with.
All right, well done to you, Padraig. Well done, that was excellent. Garda Padraig, Padraig McFadden from the Letterkenny Garda Station. We do appreciate it. We'll see you again soon. That was Community Garda information for this Tuesday, the 23rd of June, 2026. You can catch up on it, by the way, in the podcast of this programme on our website. We'll also put out the video on our Facebook and on Garda Síochána kind of Facebook pages a little later on. And it's back live for you again next Tuesday, just after the 10 o'clock news. This is Councillor Fionnán Bradley of the Fianna Fáil Party in Inishowen. Now, we are back talking about the Buncrana Community Hospital. We're keeping a close eye on this. All of us are, you in the political world and us in the media world. And there's been a meeting with the HSE and others to see how this might progress.
Yeah, so we had our second meeting yesterday, Greg, and I have to say, from talking to everybody that was there present, we certainly all feel more positive following that meeting than we have done at any point before in this process. So things are moving along, and quite a lot of work has been done in the background, in fairness to the HSE, to get this project ready to go out to tender. Now, a number of months ago, they had issued a statement saying that they hope to have it out to tender by the end of quarter three, which is, of course, only next week. And at the meeting yesterday, they were still very, very confident that they will be able to adhere to that deadline. So hopefully at some point within the next week, we'll receive the news that it has gone out to tender. And I do honestly feel once that happens, the project will move very quickly thereafter.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a time frame too, isn't it? Obviously, that process is open for a certain amount of time. So what we should know towards the end of August into September, and at that point, we'll see what tenders are on the table and then a decision will be made from there.
Yeah, so they had said if the tenders do go out by the end of quarter three, by the middle of next week, they expect to have them received back by the end of August. They would expect to go through all the various processes that they have to then to appoint a contractor. And they would hope to be in a position to appoint a contractor by the beginning of quarter four, and that construction could then commence towards the end of quarter four. So potentially we could see diggers on site in Buncrana towards the end of this year, which is very positive news because, you know, the community has been waiting on it for quite some time. And in relation to sort of future-proofing the facility then and increasing capacity down the line, there is a process underway at the minute simultaneously to this process where the HSE are doing a future capacity assessment of need. So they're looking at the population of Buncrana and the wider Inishowen area, they're looking at the demographics and they're looking at the health statistics. And they're doing all that with a view to planning for the number of beds that are going to be needed, because we all agreed yesterday at the meeting that 36, which is the number we'll have when the works are finished in Buncrana, just isn't going to cut it.
No, and I don't want to be negative, but I suppose this is the difference. This is seen as a renovation, isn't it, and not a new build. I think a lot of people listening in that area would have said, look it, we should be, when we're spending this amount of money and getting diggers on site, ETC, we should really have been assessing the needs of the peninsula or the hinterland to find out what's needed in this new building. But it is what it is, and this is a renovation, so...
Look, the assessment of need should have been done, in my opinion, back in 2018 or 2019 when these works were first proposed. And I can't really understand why it wasn't done at that stage to look at the need.
Because I think it was classed as a returning it to what it was before under new HICRA rules rather than creating a facility that is for the future of the region. It's a bit of not joined up thinking, I would argue, Fionnán. You might have a different view, but I think this was a decision or an oversight on a desktop, not necessarily, you know, a planned approach, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that absolutely has been the problem from the start with this particular project. And, you know, there are lessons to be learned there for the state and for state agencies like the HSE around engagement. And that very point was made by some of the community reps that were there yesterday. You know, if the HSE were to use them as a sounding board, as family members of those who have residents in the unit, or indeed people who would like to get respite on it, that might help. You know, it might smooth out all these processes and it might help to have your joined up thinking. We had great news yesterday in relation to the day services in Buncrana as well. So at the minute, Greg, we're accommodating 8 service users for 4 days in the week. That is going to increase in the very near future to 20 service users four
days.
And
what does that mean? Just for people listening out there who may not understand the ins and outs of it. So the day service is going from 8 people to 20 4 days a week. What does that mean, or what does that mean for the person? It means that they go in there and they're looked after for the day, or what does that actually mean?
Sure, yeah, and there are a whole range of activities that are organised for the day service users. Now, at the minute, the day service is out in the Slieve Snack Centre, which is an absolutely fantastic facility, and they really do provide a great service to the HSE. But I think we all accept that it's just not the right place. It's just too far out of the town, and we were all singing off the same hymn sheet that we want to see the day services provided back in Buncrana. So there's a two-pronged approach here. In the medium term, when the contract ends in 2 years' time, the HSE are looking for alternative accommodation within Buncrana to have the day services brought back into the town. And then long term, they are also assessing the site of Buncrana Community Hospital to see if a purpose-built day services facility could be put on site there at Buncrana Community Hospital to bring it back into the actual campus. But yeah, so there are a whole range of activities organised for the day service users, and it's you know, it's great for people who do use it. It gives them their independence, and it's a social outing, and it is also a form of respite
yeah,
during the day
sure,
for the families that are looking after them.
And you know, when John Joe McGowan was on this show, we put it to him that there was a huge appetite for community representatives to be met with. Because theirs is the most knowledgeable, with all due respect to the likes of yourself, theirs is the most knowledgeable. And it was put to us at that time, well, you know, the local reps, they're told and then we meet them. No, you have to meet these people that are on the ground, and it means so much to them. And the HSE did, in fairness to John Joe McGowan, did meet with the people directly. And you've been quite praising of them. There's a particularly a handful of them that stand out in terms of their community advocacy, Fionnán.
Yeah, the Fabulous Five, as I call them, they're five very strong, independent ladies who are well capable of speaking up for themselves and indeed for their families in the wider community. We have Maureen and Joanne Loughery, Elizabeth Ann Nelson, Tracy Duncan and Sharon Carey. And I mean, they really spearheaded this campaign. It was very frustrating as a local rep that for a year, maybe 18 months, I had been attempting to engage with the HSE. I had been making phone calls, sending in emails, making representations, and you were either being met with radio silence or you were getting what I would class as fob off answers. You know, it was just a sort of a generic answer with no new information. And it all came to a head when the ladies came together back in March and decided to organise a protest. And that really has been the catalyst for these meetings that have now been held with
okay.
the HSE, the elected reps and those community reps.
Long
as well.
Way to go yet. Thanks very much, Councillor Fionnán Bradley there. And when stuff is done, there's a pattern that's developing, and no harm to the likes of Fionnán and others. They work so hard on the ground. But people organise locally, and then people engage with us as well. We have a huge platform here. And, you know, I'm not saying we're responsible, but we've been involved in so much stuff, be it massive hundreds of millions of euro stuff, like the new hub for Letterkenny University Hospital. You know, that was a massive organisation. The people that should take all the credit are the GPs, the community, the consultants on hospital. But even those at the very head of that campaign pointed to the fact that our involvement in that campaign was critical to it getting over the line. And I'm not saying we've got anything to do with what they're doing in Buncrana. It's down to those five ladies and other. But that meeting came from a call to this program asking directly to John Joe, who's a very good man, it has to be said, and did amazing work with the Ambulance Service, and now is doing, you can see already early on, doing great stuff in terms of services for older people. That commitment was given, and here we are now after the fact. So A, organise locally, and B, for crying out loud, use us as well. We've got a great platform together as a community. It's not you and me and Caroline, it's us, right? Now, we don't get political. We're not here to campaign or get anyone out of government or get anyone in government. I'm on about stuff on the ground, boots on the ground, community-driven stuff. Okay, we're going to be back with our next... In fact, you know what? I'm not going to hold Mary on the line because it's a very important issue. Mary, I'll go straight to you. Thank you so much for joining me this morning, and good morning to you.
Morning, Greg. Thank you very much for taking my call. No, I was just listening this morning. I listen to Highland Radio every morning, so I was just listening this morning, and the upshot of the Donaldson case has really triggered an awful lot of pain for me.
Can I ask you a question before we talk about that, Mary, just for my own advice into the future? If I'm doing issues like that in the future, would it be advisable for me to sort of announce it in advance so that people like who've been through what you've been through can choose maybe to tune out or to stay with it depending on where you are in yourself? Just a bit of advice from you, Mary, if you don't mind. Would sort of suggesting, right, we're going to be talking about
that. No problem at all. Absolutely no problem, no. I feel pain, and that's reality. You know, I reported my abuser. I reported the guards, but he had absconded to another country, and they didn't include Interpol and everything else, but at the moment I know that through my brother that he has said he can't come back to where he lived. So it leaves me in a situation that I am getting therapy, and I am really appreciative of that. But what I'm trying to say is that anybody that's going through this, please, please reach out and get help, because I've carried it for 30 years, and I have, I have three beautiful children, and it's just painful. It's painful. Last night was just awful. You know, to think that somebody in a white-collar situation could do that to anybody, like, it's awful. And it brought back a lot of pain and memories and everything to me. And I just feel that all I wanted to say to your researcher was, you know, that this help out there, reach out, just reach, because, you know, you may carry it for years. I carried it for years and years and years, didn't know what was wrong with me. You know, had a journey of, you know, not a nice journey in life, you know. And but at the same time, eventually, you know, it clicked that something was wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, there was something wrong in my relationship and everything else. And that's when it came to a head, like, you know. Mm-hmm. Because, I was an innocent child at age, you know. And to be honest with you, I felt that at 8 years of age, like, you know, and being a girl, you know, my innocence told me that, he obviously liked me. And, you know, it was just the opposite, like, total opposite. And I just would like to say that anybody out there that's suffering or struggling with, you know, something that they don't know what they're struggling with, reach out to somebody, and it eventually will come to a head.
And Mary, just in when you were sort of trying to put yourself in that brain space as an eight-year-old and sort of trying to figure out what you were making of it, you were a beautiful, innocent little thing, and this person was a horrible, evil person that exploited you. You know, so please don't ever, ever assume any responsibility or blame. This was done to you by this horrible, horrible individual. And yet,
it's telling me that it's not my fault.
It's not your fault.
You know, it's not my fault. I was innocent, you know. But at the same time, I look back on it and, I still blame myself.
You can't blame yourself.
I still blame myself, you know.
You cannot. How could you blame yourself? You know, you are an amazing mom. You know, you've got to this point now, and you're seeking help and you're working through it. This evil bee exploited an innocent 8-year-old girl, and you were a victim, and you have no responsibility whatsoever. No responsibility. This person did it to you. They are 100% responsible, not 80-year-old Mary. She did nothing. Nothing.
I did nothing. Absolutely nothing. Only my innocent mind told me that he must like me, you know. Yeah. And but I think I listened to the news last night, and to see a white-coloured man having done what he's done, it really hit me hard.
Also, of course, makes it more difficult for you is...
I've heard about other people that are being done for, abusers and everything else, but I just, last night was horrific for me. It was horrific.
And you're not going to get a court date. You're not going to find out if there are others because, you know, there won't be the awareness of him in a courtroom situation. You know, in a way, Mary, you know, you've a lot to work through because, you know, you don't have answers either. And you also don't know who else this person abused. So that's a lot for you to, you know, it's a lot for you to do. And I think you're doing fantastic, to be honest with you. I think the fact that you're chatting to people and stuff.
School years and my secondary school years, you know, I would always walk home with the senior girls, you know.
Yeah.
If I was in third year, I would walk home with the senior girls and everything. And they would say to me, oh, I don't know how you live beside him. He's a sex maniac. And it just hurts so much. Like, you know, now when I look back on this, I think there's where the blame comes in. You know, I see that, you know, I should have listened. You know.
No, Mary, you're really going to have to stop. You're really going to have to stop. This sounds like a terrible thing to say. No, you were an innocent child.
No, I respect you.
An innocent child, okay? You couldn't process that information. When you were being abused, and I guarantee you this is the case, Mary, when you were being abused, I'd say your mum and dad didn't even know what the word paedophile meant. I bet there was not even a name on it. We were living in different times. The word paedophile, I remember my dad asking mom when it was mentioned on the news what this word was. He didn't know. So you were a tiny little child. You couldn't have known. So please don't blame yourself, Mary. You're doing really, really well.
Yeah.
Have you someone with you, Mary, today that you can just have a chat with, or you're not on your own there,
I
or
have
any friends?
No, I'm not on my own. No,
okay,
no.
That's all right.
My brother and my husband here. Okay. And they are supportive, you know. But they couldn't, when I did open up and say, you know, that I was abused, like, you know, I don't think that they understood. Because I don't think they believed that anything like that could happen.
Yeah. I understand that.
Really don't believe that they could. Three beautiful children that have done very well for themselves and everything. Yeah. And I don't believe that they believed that anything like this could happen.
But do you know why that is, though, Mary? It's because you've been so strong. It's because you've been so strong and people are looking at you and going, how could this person achieve all she's achieved, raising three beautiful children, being a brilliant wife? You know, it's because you're so amazing that it's hard to believe. But now people know, and I hope it's so important that we don't allow borders to be a protection for these evil bees. Yeah. I can't use the words that I would like to use if I wasn't talking to you in a different situation, that you should be able to look at that man in a court and say, you did this to me, you haven't beaten me, you've did this to me, and you're going away for a long time. And hopefully that day comes for you, Mary.
I think last night, you know, my brother wanted to see the news and it came up in the news. And I think, you know, I could feel the anger coming up in myself. Mm. And, like, I have, I have done all the homework that I have to do. Like, and but at this unfortunate situation I'm in, he's in another country. So, but at the same time, I'm still going to counselling, and I have to say, they're brilliant.
Okay.
Absolutely brilliant. And I just want to get the message out there. Anybody that's suffering, just reach out. Mm. Reach out.
Okay. You're asking people to do
it
that.
It might take them.
And I'm asking you to do one thing for me, Mary. As hard as it is, please give young Mary a break and don't be blaming her. She was a completely innocent victim. You did nothing wrong. There was no warnings you could have heeded. You were exploited and you did nothing wrong except go on in your strength to do amazing things and give life to three girls. So you should be so proud of yourself. Don't blame yourself and continue to speak out, because you're obviously way, 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 way stronger than I could ever be. And it's amazing. But just give yourself, give your younger self a bit of a break, will you?
Thank you.
All right, look after yourself, Mary.
Thank you very much.
If you need to speak to someone, the Rape Crisis Centre is there. They're very, very good. It can just be a conversation, by the way. It doesn't mean you have to do anything. You can just ring them and say, this happened to me and this happened to me when. And as I say, it doesn't mean you're starting a process where you're going to end up in court or anything like that there. That would always be completely up to you. But it could be the start of maybe relieving some of what you've been through. 1-800-77-8888 at any time, day or night. That's the Rape Crisis Centre. It's free, confidential listening and support service for anyone who's been raped, sexually assaulted, sexually harassed or sexually abused at any time in their lives. Greg, it's piercing through my heart listening to Mary. I can so identify with her. I was raped by a guard the day after my 17th birthday. Long story. I wish I could come forward. Oh, sorry, I wish I could comfort Mary. And Mary's got, we're going to check in on Mary, obviously, right? And she has people around her as well. Morning, Greg. I heard the message earlier about a person that reported being sexually abused to the Guardian. Nothing has been done. There's a podcast at the moment from RTE called Pirate Predator. And there was a pirate radio producer, Eamon Cook. They got away with child abuse for decades because, you checked that? You did? Yep. They got away with child abuse for decades because the Gardaí protected him. Disgraceful, disgraceful stuff. I've thought so many times about naming my abuser and going to the Gardaí, but he moved to America and never comes home. I've always thought deep down it's because he knows the minute he does, I'll go to the Gardaí. Many like me are stuck in this place of knowing they're out of reach of the authorities. But, let's get together and talk to each other because... And I suspect with Mary, people try and carry that themselves for years, and it's an incredible burden, and it's so tough. And there are people out there that will help and understand and know exactly what you're going through. That's where we leave it on the programme today. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9 a.m.